I'm Stacey Gross, and this is Two Moms Day Drinking. I originally met Michael Hsu on a public message board where podcasters could solicit new guests and offer guest opportunities on their own shows to other podcasters. I was on an episode of Michael's podcast, Healed from the Ground Up, at the height of the lockdown here in the U.S. last spring. Over the course of the past year or so, Michael and I have kept in contact, and with a new son of his own, Michael agreed to be a guest on my podcast. Michael is the author of two books, You Are the Fucking Shit, Heal Your Anxiety, Anger, and Depression from the Ground Up, and Whose Movie Are You In? Transform Your Intergenerational Trauma into Your Source of Light. In his episode, Michael started out not even sure he wanted to log on to our meeting. He had been having some trouble sleeping and dealing with some anxiety over the fact that he has built his brand, his books, and his business on being an expert at helping others heal trauma in their own lives. Yet the idea of being transparent about his own insecurities and struggles or failures on a podcast that would be broadcast to others seemed to him to undermine the expertise he's developed.
Like, I was, I'm glad I'm doing this, but I was really close to, like, I felt really bad, really close to canceling the interview because, I wasn't feeling emotionally well. I had not slept. And my wife just told me, you know, you have to be transparent. It's take this as an opportunity, you know, stop, you know, just nauseous to see you trying to show that you have all the answers.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think, yeah. Because, yeah, it wasn't feeling well. Like, I just didn't sleep well. And then I didn't feel like, you know, you interview the expert and I don't feel like that. But then I think it's good for me to be transparent.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's fine. I felt like in the last one, I'm not sure if you were uncomfortable then or what, but, yeah, I mean, it's whatever you want to talk about, you know, you don't have to, be the expert if you don't want to. I feel like kind of my thing is, I feel like I'm supposed to be an expert all the time when it comes to my kids, and I'm definitely not. And so I have this cognitive dissonance, you know?
Yeah.
Going on as a mom, but.
Yeah.
So what did you want to talk about? Like,
that's what I want to talk about.
Yeah.
just parenting myself, basically.
Yeah. So tell me, okay, give me some background on yourself and like, what it is that you do and your whole thing, because people may not be familiar with you and what your background is.
My background is I help people heal anxiety, anger, and depression from the ground up through emotional trauma healing, such as intergenerational and childhood trauma healing.
So lots of pressure. You felt some pressure then to come on here and talk about parenting.
The pressure is just to be, you know, like just the stigma, you know, the stigma, the, you know, that's how all interviews are. This is an expert talking about something. And then I didn't feel emotionally well and I didn't sleep the whole, this is morning right now for me. And I didn't sleep. So I just feel like, a hypocrite, a fraud. How can I share something when I can't help myself? So that was, yeah.
Yeah.
This is, yeah. And sleep has been an ongoing issue for me since I started dating my wife. Something set off. I think she triggered some stuff in my childhood. And since the birth of my son, because that definitely set something off, because my mother never took care of me throughout the night as a newborn because she didn't want me to wake her up and then she wouldn't be able to go to sleep and she would die. Mm-hmm. So that's something that really intensified after having my son. Then I started sleeping better for, you know, past few months. And then I struggled again, and then I slept well for 2 days, and then now back at it again. You know, like it's a really big, not sleeping is one of the big horrors for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I get that. I have a hard time falling asleep. Once I'm asleep, I could stay asleep forever, but it's the anxiety of it. I work myself up getting ready to go to bed even, you know, at this point. I definitely know that feeling.
This is just a side note. If I had to do, because there's other interviews I do, but then I'm glad I'm doing this interview with you, because I feel comfortable sharing, you know, my vulnerability with you. We've known each other for a while, so.
Yeah, I'm glad. It seems like it might be something that's kind of hard for you to share or be open about. So, you know, it's just whatever you're comfortable with. Yeah, I'm glad you feel comfortable.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know anything you'd like to ask me about this experience that triggers trauma. I think, yeah, this, I don't know what it is. It's just when I don't sleep, I just, and the pressure, I was like, oh no. I tell you everything that was going in my mind. Okay. I was like, okay, yeah. I was learning things. It helped me to sleep better. And then they weren't working at this time. And I was like, oh no, I have a podcast interview. I have this, I have that all that day. I was supposed to take my son out to this play center, and then I was going to be productive on my computer. And I was like, oh, all that's to waste. I'm going to disappoint Stacy, because she has her day off. Her parents are helping watch her kids, and I'm going to cancel, or I'm going to feel well. And I was like, oh, and then. Yeah, there's this, I'm trying to figure it out, which is bad, you know, because I think like my mind is trying to like race, and I know that goes like on a downward spiral. I read this in a book, and it said like, there's this author, he was talking about another author who wrote this book called The Peace of Mind. He said, that's, the author writes really well, but there is no such thing. It's impossible to have peace of mind, because if you have mind, you have no peace. So the correct title should be Peace of No Mind.
It's true.
So you can hear, like, I'm just trying to figure it out, and I was just like, I don't know. I mean, what are your That's thoughts and feelings true. About these sleepless nights?
Oh my gosh. I I'm really sorry if being on the podcast gave you sleepless nights, but I
No. It's a good thing, because I gotta it's a pressure to perform, pressure of, because I've always had to be, like, as a child, I had to be responsible for my mother's panic attacks to console her. My father wasn't emotionally, he's not connecting with his own emotions, so he can't help my mother. So I had to be her husband. And then my mother's fear was more important than my well-being. She'd always like project it onto me till this very day. In my growing up, my dad always like coddled her and didn't protect me. So I'm conditioned and programmed to feel like I'm responsible for how other people feel.
Yeah,
and this dynamic replays itself in my marriage, because I try to be her parent, micromanage, control her. She also has this tendency to like want to be served, because to be to have the parent that she didn't have, but she knows that. So we try to like break free from that. But then so this. I don't know, I'm rambling, so It's not, am I
it sounds sense? Like you carry so many, you, and your book is called Whose Movie Are You In? It sounds like you carry so many of your mom's stories, or you carry so much of what she struggled with. You struggle with separating from yourself still, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And you said you wanted to talk about like parenting the inner child and like going back to your own intergenerational issues. Was having a kid a trigger for that for you?
I mean, it plunged me into it because when I had my son, like I was scared. When I had to change a diaper in the middle of the night, if I had to go to the restroom, I was scared that I wouldn't be able to go back asleep and I would die, which was the same thing my mom experienced when I was born. But like, so yeah, I think I was trying to process, like I think about it. I was trying to sleep. I was like, oh, I'm going to be on a podcast, be public. And I was thinking like, okay, what's my worst fear, worst case scenario? So that's what I tried to find out my underlying feelings, to process things. I tried to do that. And then I was like, I think it may be to be judged mm-hmm. by others. I remember one time I was in Czech Republic because that's where my son was born. Mm-hmm. And my son at that time only breastfed and would not drink milk out of a bottle. And I took him out for grocery shopping. So by the time I'm coming back, he's like, starts crying because he's hungry. Mm-hmm. And then I have no way to feed him. And so that whole bus, I just felt the judgment. Like, and I saw this one old guy just kept on looking back at me and just nodding his head like, oh my gosh, you know? And I just, and then the judgment I felt there is like so strong. I could feel it, you know, I could really feel it. That's like, that. So it reminds me like if I go on publicly and I'm a fraud, or if I mm-hmm. can't take care of myself, I think the worst fear is like not only they see that, but they judge me. Or I learned this from clients mm-hmm. because sometimes I can see myself through them. Mm-hmm. And then I've heard that like, well, if I make a mistake, if I show that I'm weak, then they can't depend on me. Mm-hmm. Right? So if I have to be this caretaker, servant, parentified role for everybody, for my own parents, for every, mm-hmm. then if I'm weak, if I show that I have issues, then I can't take care of other people. And then that's my whole identity. Then I'm completely lost. Mm-hmm. So I know there's that, but I know, I'm sorry, I'm rambling, but that's how, but the fear of judgment.
I get it, dude. This is 100% my thesis. I hate this. This is so for moms, at least here in the United States. I know you guys were here for a little bit, but for moms here specifically, that judgment is everywhere, like whether you're soliciting it or even inviting it or not. And so that's one of the biggest things that I talk about. Is that fear of judgment and how it affects our experience of parenting. How has it affected your experience of parenting at all, if you're aware of any?
Two things came up. The second one is, I think, is more strong. But then the first one, I do want to, like, there's this intergenerational trauma of judgment, because I noticed that because my mom would just vomit her fear of death onto me. And obviously, I'm like in it right now. I'm replaying this fear of death through the fear of not having sleep. So it really affects me. So I tell her, and my experience in telling her is that she like gets extremely defensive. She has to like almost end the call. My dad is trying to like calm her down and really help her hear me out so I can feel better. But her being criticized is like the worst. Like, oh, it's like she's being teamed up, because I feel that when in her childhood, her mother would always show love and affection to her brother, but never hugged her, and then would mock her. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, when she would smile, she's like, oh, you know, like to which you laugh at her, like, oh, you look like a cut up watermelon with seeds.
Oh, no, she didn't.
But my grandma's like really. But my grandma, you look at her, I mean, I shouldn't gloss over it, but my grandma's extremely sweet. I love her now. Their relationship is so much better now. But what I don't know what called upon her, like her upbringing, she was also abandoned and raised in this traditional culture of like men are more, boys are more important than girls. But also she was abandoned because her father remarried for a prettier wife, quote unquote. And then the second wife did not want to have her a part of the family. So she was abandoned in the worst way possible, especially during wartime.
Jeez.
Because she was raised by her grandparents and she fled to her father's new home for safety. And he, when he opened the door, his first reaction was disappointment because he knew that his second wife would be upset about it. But this, she's running away from communists, from Japanese invasion. She's running for her life. She's running by herself. She's running until her feet are all swollen and she has to take rest on the mountaintop. But anyways, yeah, so this fear of judgment, it's like, I can't criticize her. I'm not criticizing her, but I can tell like she doesn't want to hear any of it. She's like, though. But the other thing is, I remember because I sometimes see clients, I got to protect myself. I stop fusing myself into their energy. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But sometimes I can see myself and I talked to somebody yesterday and it was really angry on how other people were not giving them validation, appreciation, and there was manipulation, no authentic relationship. I'm trying to spare all the details. But then the person was so harsh with themselves. Like they weren't giving themselves any validation, appreciation, but wanting other people to do that for them. And I feel like that's what I'm doing. You know, I'm fearing the judgment of others, but I'm judging myself.
Yeah.
And I'm being brutal with myself. And I think that's, yeah.
Yeah. What kinds of things are you afraid that people are going to find out about you? I think you should just talk about them. I think you should totally just talk about them because that's what I do. And then I have a panic attack and then somebody writes to me and they're like, holy shit, thank you for talking about that because now I feel better too.
Wait, I like that question. Say it again.
What kinds of things are you afraid that people might find out? Like what kinds of vulnerabilities are causing you to have anxiety about people finding out about? Because I think those are the things that you should probably talk about, honestly.
When I was trying to sleep,
yeah,
I was like thinking about podcasts and I was like, okay, let's stretch it to the worst fear, worst case scenario. Let's say
yeah.
I was standing in front of a crowd of 10,000 people and I didn't sleep the night before. What the heck I'm going to say? Like, fraud.
Well, I promise you there's not 10,000 people listening. Would that that were the case.
No, this is the massive amount of people judging and criticizing me. But like I tell you everything I struggle with. Since my wife's pregnancy, I started losing a lot of hair. And so I look in the mirror. Every time I wash my hands, it's like a little traumatic experience. I analyze to see how visible my scalp is. When I wash my hair, when you go to the salon, get your hair cut, yeah. they really rub your hair like that.
Yeah.
I really hate them. You got to be gentle aggressive. Or else the hairs will fall off. So when I wash my hair, I'm like so gentle. It's like when I did an Instagram live yesterday to try to like be have a video and be more and share my message that way. And when I rewatched it, my first reaction was like, oh, I look worn out and ugly. The fear of me being looking ugly, that's a constant thing I experience. I have a lot of battles with my wife, but it's triggering a lot of stuff within me where I feel like, yeah, she has this tremendous sweet tooth. And I like, okay, she's not going to listen. This is so bad what I did. Okay, so. No. It's bad. It's not bad when you hear it, but I know it in my soul, it's a very bad thing. So she has a tremendous sweet tooth, a lot of addictive behaviors. So a few days ago, we have time apart sometimes. And then so for lunch, she ate 4 big pastries. She has to have, in Taiwan, there's always sweet drinks available, and she has to order a drink every day. And so I don't know if you, do you know what boba is? So there's this Asian tea drink, milk tea, and they put these balls into it, tapioca balls.
Yep. Yeah, I do know what that is.
Okay. So she loves that. And then she understands, she's trying to eat less, consume less sugar. But then she ordered, she's recently ate the 4 pastries, and she ordered the boba. She had a drink with boba. We're going out. Cause we had, I said, okay, it's more time efficient. You go buy the drink and I'll go get the, go to grocery store to pick up coconut water for my son. And then she came back with a boba drink. I was so angry. I got angry about it. So we're sharing the drink. Okay. As we're walking to the subway station. And as I share the drink, I drink a lot of the boba. When she's not looking, I just spit it out.
Oh, rotten. No, I'm just kidding.
This, because that's how much try to control or feel responsible. I mean, it's not easy. Because the last time we went to the dentist, she got her all teeth fixed. 2 months later, she was eating all kinds of sweets. And then the dentist says, you have 8 cavities. And so I do have, I know there's, but it's, I knew that when I was spitting out the boba, it's a harmless thing, seemingly, right. But I think it's toxic for my soul.
Yeah, I get that. It was the only way that you could express that, though, almost in that moment.
What, say it again?
I feel like that was the only way that you could really express that in that emotion, or express that in that moment that felt safe. That was just your immediate reaction was, this is how I'm going to show you how I feel.
Oh, to my wife?
Sense. Yeah.
No, she doesn't know, because I'm just... No, what I was doing is she's like, oh, yeah, here's some... She's sharing the drink. Then I just... suck in a lot of boba while she's not looking. just spit it out. I don't like it because it's so sticky in your and it makes my teeth hurt. But anyways, I just looked at the drink and I was like, wow, it was so much boba in there. But you need a lot of control.
Yeah, you were feeling do you think that you were feeling cognitive dissonance? Do you think that you were feeling...
What is cognitive dissonance?
So, the conflict between, I'm supposed to be an expert about intergenerational issues and childhood trauma, and I'm going to go on a podcast and talk about parenting, and I feel like I'm not an expert, so I'm going to get found out. Was that kind of the whole conflict?
The conflict was that I was in the middle of a struggle, a middle of a traumatic struggle, which is not sleeping. Brings other people have their own worst fears, and maybe spiders. Mine is sleep. Yeah. So to me, to have an episode of not sleeping is, that's the, and then trying, and then saying like, oh, this is how you do it. And I can't even do it for myself. In that moment, it's most strong. I understand there's always going to be stuff coming up in life. And you process, you heal through it. But when I have the episode and it's my weakest point, one of my weakest points, I don't know what it brings up the most pain for me. Then it's hard for me. But my wife was right. You know, she's like, Michael, you have to be transparent. Talk about everything, and make this an opportunity to heal. And I feel good just talking about it now. So
good. What other kinds of things did you want to bring up or discuss, or what kinds of
more insecurities?
Yeah, I mean, what kinds of things do you have to say about parenting? What's your experience of it been?
But see, this is the reason why I talk about this is because I feel like this is parenting, because the rest is gravy. Like when I'm with my son, it's just me being free with him, me being having joy with him. And me trying to teach him how to speak Chinese or English, but that's it, you know, and then letting him be as happy. The parenting to me, this is the parenting. Mm-hmm. When I'm struggling, because the parenting will bring up struggles in us all, like this internal struggle that seemingly is separate, but that's because they can feel all of that.
Yeah.
And that stuff is, if I don't take care of it, that's going to transfer over. Mm-hmm. Just like I'm living out my mother's pain because she didn't take care of it, you know? Mm-hmm. So that, okay. Can I talk more insecurities?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Dude, okay, yeah. Okay. That's awesome.
So, but yeah, in marriage, like it's just relationships, they just bring up so much crap. Another thing that comes up is in my journal, like if I talk about my marriage, if I'm not feeling well, it's always like my wife is making unilateral decisions. Mm-hmm. And it makes me feel like I don't matter. Mm-hmm. And it sets me off. Like this is something I'll talk about something I'm not proud about. And I know I've had personal like counseling sessions and they told me to keep me in check. And they tell me, oh no, Michael, you shouldn't do that. That's, you know, her body, her choice. That's what let me explain to you. Like, so like my wife's, it sounds, I don't know, whatever, people are going to judge me, but I don't really care. I don't agree. I don't preferably like my wife's like fat style of like fashion choices. Like, they're very extreme, and then, or I don't know, like so. She read on. She's watching the psychic that she really likes and she follows, and then she'd recommend for spiritual people you should wear flowy dresses or something like that. And then I prefer that she's more like show some type of femininity or sensual and I was like, oh, and I, because like for 6 years, I've never was able to pick a piece of clothing for her. Maybe here and there, but she's always bought her own clothes. And I did it one time, really. And that was her wedding dress. And she looked like she looked fire. Everybody looked. So, and I told her yesterday, she talked about, oh, like I need to redo my wardrobe and I'm going to get flowy. And then like, I remember I brought up earlier before, I was like, but how about this other clothes? It's like, no, I'm going to get this. And then she's really set on her ways. And then she brought up again, like, oh, I'm going to redo my wardrobe. And then that feeling came up like, oh, well, I'm okay. Like that's your choice. It's perfectly, that's your choice. I have nothing to say about that. But I wanted her to like also wear these type of clothings. The things that I like, I think that she would look great in. And I didn't say anything and it bothered me. And then I just said it to her right before she went to bed. And she was nice about it. It's like, you know, how about this? Like when we go shopping, I'll let you pick, you know, some of the clothes. But it was just this traumatic feeling that came up. that what I want does not, that's the core feeling, is what I want does not matter. Mm-hmm. And then the reason why when I see clients, it helps me see myself. So I'm just mm-hmm. gleaning off examples, and they were angry about other people, you know, mm-hmm. not giving them the appreciation and validation. But really, they were really angry at their parent, mm-hmm. you know. And that's what happens in my marriage. Like, I feel like my wife is selfish. But the thing I haven't really come to terms with yet. I kind of gloss over it. I need to forgive my mother. But it was selfish for my mother to continuously project her pain and responsibility onto me and make me responsible for her pain mm. over my well-being. So I get mad at my wife for being selfish. Mm. Like one time we're doing quarantine in the southern part of Taiwan. And I love, you know, like trying new foods and eating a little bit too much. But mm. then she had ordered for me, you know, I'm not allowed to do anything for her, but she had ordered for me but her explanation was, you know, you were in a rush, blah, blah. So I just ordered for you. And I got so angry because you're making a decision for me. This comes in finances as well. You know, like, granted, she makes better decisions. The psychic says, like, you know, like, she's, I'm sorry to say, but she makes better decisions than you. But then there's this she makes unilateral decisions with money or with this. And then with that Uber Eats thing she ordered for me, it sets me off because it makes me feel like what I want does not matter. And I don't know if it's so programmed into me, because at birth, my mother did not take care of me throughout the night. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's from the conception. Like a baby, an infant wants their mother, and I did not have that. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I can't remember it. I was just told to me, but I feel like if that's the case, then this primal need I did not have, mm-hmm. you know? And obviously throughout my childhood and upbringing, teenager, adult, like, you know, my mother just puts her fear of death onto me, or pain, fixation on health and safety, and it's like, I'm just always responsible for it. And my father didn't protect me. So it's like, I feel like I'm angry at my wife, but I'm really angry at my mother for, you know, but I did tell the, you know, like you have to practice forgiveness to let that go, to let that pain go. But I feel like I still haven't fully acknowledged it or something.
Yeah. I feel like you're a lot like me. I feel like your relationship with your child is kind of easy for you, whereas your relationship with your parents and some other people in your life are harder. Is that true?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's easier just because I focus on the real issue. Mm-hmm.
It's easier to just be present in the moment with your son than it is with.
If I didn't deal with all this stuff, then I'd be like putting it onto him. And I catch myself, sometimes I'll put it onto him. Mm-hmm. And I got to be really careful about that. It's just a really small thing. I was like, I was changing. If normally I change his diaper, he's like, okay. And then a couple months ago, he just would not want me to put on his diaper. He just like trying to like crawl around and then like not at all. And I just told it happened for like 5 days or 6 days in a row. And I told my wife, mm-hmm. like, oh, this is not normal behavior. Mm-hmm. And then my wife got triggered a little bit by that. She's like, what? Because like her programming in childhood, like not normal means you're defective. Mm-hmm. And then, but then I could tell like I was bothered because I need to be productive. I need to be efficient, mm-hmm. you know, and he's preventing me from doing that. So then, after I acknowledged that and I changed his diaper, ever since then, when I realized that I give him toys to play with, I entertain him, mm-hmm. I'm present with him, And I tell him that I'm changing his diaper. Then he didn't. He just like lies there. Mm-hmm. Or if he's like squirms, like wants to move a little bit, then I just entertain him. Mm-hmm. And then he doesn't. He allows me to change his diaper. I know this is a small thing, but it's just got to, I don't know, nip it in the bud or something.
Yeah. I don't know. It just seems like when you talk about being around your son, it sounds like you're more at ease almost. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, there's moments where, because we're teaching him English, Russian, Chinese, mm-hmm. and then my wife is more patient with teaching him languages. Mm-hmm. And I am not as much. I get internally frustrated. I can sense that. I don't want to play this blame game, but the thing that comes up internally is like, he's not going to be able to communicate. And my mother, like, because I would not listen to her fears all the time. Mm-hmm. She always say like, oh, you know, your SAT math score was so high, but your verbal score was not good because you have poor comprehension, because I don't abide by her fears all the time. So in high school, she had taken me to an ADHD clinic and I had bioneural feedback. I had that treatment like every week. So ever since then, I didn't realize the connection until way later. I had this fear I wasn't able to comprehend what other people were saying, not able to vocalize what I really wanted to say. Right. So like I can see that in my son, like, oh, if he's not speaking, people ask like, oh, wait, you know, is he speaking? I was like, oh, no, not yet. Or because it's so many languages, it's going to take him a little while.
Yeah.
And so that insecurity comes up. Mm-hmm. So I have to manage that process of that and just and be present and keep teaching him. And now he's actually, he understands the English, like, oh, where is this? Where is that? Mm-hmm. And I'm doing the same thing with Chinese and he's beginning to understand that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's why I got to keep these fears and traumas in check.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you do that for yourself? What in the moments when you have been able to catch it and be like, oh, okay, wait a minute, this is another issue. This has nothing to do with my...
I mean, my wife will keep me check, really.
Yeah.
My wife is very sensitive about a child being neglected or something. Mm-hmm. It's like, what? But yeah, my wife will keep me in check. Mm-hmm. But I intuitively I know that because there's so much emotional crap that comes up when you have a child, but just internally, mm-hmm. or marriage, having a relationship, all that stuff comes up. So I know that this is the main thing. This is my greatest gift to him.
Yeah, is dealing with your own stuff.
That's the parenting. Yeah. That's the core part of it. Because, mm-hmm. I have a lot of clients who will bring, parents who will bring their children to me, but they don't realize that the parents guide the ship, mm-hmm. you know? So the child is, they can break free for sure, but in generally speaking, for a child, they're only going to go as far as the parent goes. Mm-hmm. So it's incredibly hard if, like, I have one client where the one parent is very abusive and angry and not willing to look at themselves. The other parent is, and it's very fortunate because then it can kind of guide the ship that the child is on.
Mm-hmm. I love that, actually. I think that's a really important topic that has not come up on the show before, which is, you have to be 100% on top of your own stuff in order to be a good parent.
I mean, for sure, because a lot of this pain is, it just keeps, it's a cycle of pain through the generations. Mm-hmm. So you got to stop the buck, mm-hmm. here and now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. That's actually, I'm really glad you brought that up. That's a new angle that I haven't had a chance to really think about or look at before with other people. So I don't know. Now it's got my wheels turning. I'm thinking about different essays and stuff that I want to write.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. What's your favorite part of parenting?
Just a side note, I just want to say I feel much more present now, just in general. Mm-hmm. Not just in general when I'm in life, I feel. Mm-hmm. Because the transparency really allows you to be present.
Yeah. Have you ever read Brené Brown?
Comfortable with yourself. I read one of her books, The Gifts of Imperfection or something.
Yeah. She's a shame researcher. She's fascinated by and focused on shame and how it shapes how we develop and why we develop the way that we do. And she's always advocated for like radical honesty, not making choices or living our lives dependent on what the potential shame might be as a result. And I think it's hard, but it's freeing, you know? And every time that you gain a little bit of traction, it's like the next time it's easier and the next time it's easier.
Yeah. 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 I'm sorry, what was the question you were asking?
I guess I was just, what you were saying reminded me of Brené Brown. So I was curious if you'd ever read her.
Oh no, there was another question you're asking.
Before that,
and I cut you off
that far back.
Okay. Okay.
How do you? I'm not sure how I want to ask this question yet. You keep going. I'll think of it. I'll figure it out.
Yeah. But I'm good. I shared every insecurity.
What's your favorite part of parenting? What's the thing you love the most about it?
I'm a new parent, but the joy of the child, the joy. I don't know. I can't compare. I just know my child, the joy of my child. His name is Zen, but his Chinese name, because you have to pick two characters. The third character is the last name. Okay. So we had to pick another character because it cannot just be one. It cannot be like only one character for the name.
Okay.
Because we went to like this like fortune teller name psychic. I'm not named fortune teller in Taiwan like a year ago. And then they're like, oh, one name. That's so bad. It's bad luck, bad luck, bad luck. And then they analyze his name like, oh, my God, he's going to have poor health. He's going to have no money, bad relationships. and then me and my wife agree like, okay, you know what? We're just not going to pick a Chinese name because there was so much bad. And then we're like, but we have to pick a Chinese name because we have to process his Taiwan documents for citizenship. Mm-hmm. So that other character we pick, Joyful Zen. Joyful. Because he was laughing and smiling. But, he's just a funny, joyful kid. So
that's cool.
So he said, what do I love about parenting the most?
Yeah.
To be honest, like this conversation I'm having with you right now, because parenting brings up pain and struggle that was there before you had your child. And if I didn't have this struggle, I wouldn't be talking with you today, sharing what I've learned from my own experiences. Mm-hmm. I would have very little offer if I didn't have the pain and struggle that was brought up by having a family.
Yeah. I like that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You think you're going to have more kids?
Oh yeah, actually. I totally want more kids. Sorry. Yeah. I just had to check the time because I have another session, but I still have plenty of time, but, Yeah, I definitely want to have more kids.
That's cool. Like,
at least one more. And I think even ideal is to have three.
Really?
My wife originally, before having a child, wanted five children. When she was pregnant, she wanted five children.
Wow.
And she planned it out on a schedule.
All right. Okay,
after, to like to make sure, you know, like how much time in between so we can get all fitted in.
Yeah.
But then after having our first child, after giving birth and raising the child, he's like, totally, like, all that plan went out the window.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. That happens
a lot, I think. She had 3D third degree tears, perineal tears.
Yeah.
So it was hard. Emotionally, it was very hard. So she wants to feel better, I think, feel better emotionally.
Yeah.
Feel better physically before.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. The process of just pregnancy and birth can be traumatic in and of itself. I know a lot of people who have said, oh, I was going to have like three or four kids and now I have one and I'm all done.
But yeah, tell me more about because I only heard it like here and there, the traumas of pregnancy and birth. Like what kind of, can you give me some examples?
Pregnancy and birth can be super traumatic for a lot of women. There's an expectation, and I don't know how much of it is cultural specific to here in the United States and how much of it is you would see globally, but there's an expectation when you become pregnant, when you're going to become a mom, that yourself, your entitlement to a sense of self even kind of goes out the window. Everything becomes for the child. So it can be traumatic in a sort of like existential way for a lot of women, especially if it was unplanned, or, you know, unprepared for. But then just the birth experience itself can be traumatic. It's not, depending on what choices people make as far as where they want to have their kids, you know, a traditional hospital birth or a C-section can be just a traumatic experience in and of itself, you know?
You mean the physical aspect of it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because my wife had, like, I don't know the correct term, but it was an induced pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So it was, they thought it was taking too long. So they gave her a certain hormones and to make the, and then she said, she looked online that can create these tears rather than letting it come out naturally. So
I mean, having kids, it just, and it has completely changed me and changed everything that I thought I knew about myself, and has challenged so much that I thought I knew about the world, or ideals or beliefs that I've had have just completely been flipped on their heads when I had a kid, you know, or I had two at once. But, you know, it can be existentially a really jarring experience for a lot of women. And especially if there's not like a support network or, you know, supportive people around them. So, you know, I'm always curious too, how it is for men. Did you feel any kind of like, your sense of self, were you secure in it? Were you, was it intact? Was it questioned or challenging at all for you having a kid? Did that challenge your sense of self?
Can you repeat how the sense of self is challenged for women as they're going through pregnancy and birth again? Because you said something about existential.
Yeah. I mean, the expectation, culturally here, at least in the United States, is that you will take a backseat. Everything that you ever wanted, everything that you ever planned for your life, if the choice comes down to taking care of your kids or finishing a degree program, you're expected to want to choose to take care of your kids and give up the degree program or the job or whatever else it is that fulfills you as a person independent of your children. You're expected to set that completely aside or else there's judgment. And so that's one of the things that I kind of rail against on this podcast is I don't think that the two need to be mutually exclusive. And that we need to stop shaming women for choosing to have kids and also whatever it is that fulfills them. You know, there are people who would criticize me and say, you're taking time away from your kids to create a podcast. And I say, I'm a better version of their mother when I podcast because it's for me. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, as long as you are following your, especially if you're following your dreams, that's the greatest, you know, gift you can give to your kids.
Yeah. I feel like modeling that model, retaining a sense of self, it's just so hard culturally here because the expectation, I mean, it's so easy to be called a bad mom. And I'm
thinking, really? Feel like, but in the US, to me, it's crazy. After 2 months, mm-hmm. 2 months of maternal leave, they're supposed to go back to work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm just saying there's no support system to, mm-hmm. just to be a mom and be with their, you know, infant. It's like, just like go back to working. I don't know. That's something separate.
Yeah. Yeah. The parental leave issue, I mean, globally, I think everywhere gives more leave than we do. And I'm really fascinated by attachment theory. The first 5 years and your, you know, attachment to your parent, whether it's secure or insecure, is going to set you up for how you, you know, view and interact with the world going forward. How can kids have secure attachments with their parents if their parents have to go back to work when they're 2 months old? Do you know what I mean?
In Czech Republic, because that's where my wife also has citizenship, as well, I think they have 2 or 3 years mm-hmm. of support.
Yeah,
and financial in support, and
yeah, and it's for the men too. It's for the entire family, you know, because the core idea is that if the family isn't strong, then you're going to need social programs. You're going to need to correct problems that should have been, you know, planned for.
And then parenting of babies is like 24/7 job, and. And I work online, but I'm like, all my time, all my free time is with the baby. Like, I'm not the traditional father, like going to work and coming back at nighttime. And it's still like, it takes up all of our time. I can't imagine having to go to work and send your baby to daycare or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll drive a person crazy. But then, you know, You work all day. I work, you know, 12-hour days sometimes, 13-hour days. I'll be on the road for 6 hours a day and working in between that. And I'll be expected to come home and be super excited and happy to see my kids. And, you know, so for women, that's a problem. But you have another
appointment. I need a, because I had a counseling session.
Yeah.
I just need to look at it. Okay, as well.
Yeah. I think that's the most healing thing. You know, when I worked at, I was at a newspaper, the first writing job that I ever had, they gave me a column and every week I could just write about my life and be funny or be serious or tell stories or talk about what frustrated me or what I struggled with. And, hearing back from people that they loved it or they read it every week or it made them laugh or it made them feel good, that it's that interaction. It's not just the sharing of it, but it's having someone bear witness to it and respond to it in a way that leaves you feeling like, oh, I'm not the only person who has this problem or whatever, you know, that's my biggest thing. If I could teach everybody how to write and podcast and tell their stories, that would make me happy. Cause I feel like everybody needs to find their voice or their way of talking about those things.
You mean talking about the things that they struggle with mm-hmm. or yeah. even currently struggle with?
Mm-hmm. Speaking openly about it, to other people and just being really, you know, shameless about it.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure.
It's good for you.
I mean, I can feel it right now, so.
Yeah, good.
My mind is not racing as much.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Was there anything that I didn't ask you that you wanted to talk about, or?
Maybe we can talk about this urge of me wanting to jump off the cliff. I'm just joking. I'm just completely joking. I don't know if I made a bad joke, but no.
I'm like, I don't know if I'm qualified for that one, but you can.
No, I'm just completely joking. I mean, that's I'm trying to I'm imagining me taking a broom inside myself and trying to sweep. Did I sweep everything? Did I share everything? That's pretty much it. I mean, if I told you the boba story, I told you everything.
Right on.
It was really sly. I would just drink it.
So why?
And then I'll tell you the funny story was the guy. There was a guy walking behind me, and then I wanted to turn around and just spit it out, but then he's like. He saw me do it once, and he's like, "Dude, that's weird. What the heck are you doing?
What are you doing?"
So I waited until we had parted ways from the guy walking behind us, and then my wife would obviously see me. So what I did was I just put my hand like a fist to my mouth, and I just spit it into my hands, and I just then she could not see it.
Was it just a passive aggressive thing to do? Was that? What do you think it was?
No. It's about trying to be responsible for her well-being, for her physical well-being.
Saving her from herself.
Yeah, that's yeah.
I love it.
There's a lot of... Hopefully
you're not in trouble when she hears that.
No, I mean... I feed her supplements. And I'm, anxious about it because... She cannot swallow supplements. There's this old trauma where she got tried to swallow something and it got caught in her throat. Mm-hmm. So I have to open up the pills, mix it with yogurt. And it's going to taste really nasty for her, right? Yeah. For anybody. But so she doesn't take it all the time. And then, so it bugs me out when she doesn't take it or she's unwilling to take it. But I'm always preparing it and wanting to prepare it. I'm if she's using this is something people may not believe it, but I've studied this, but cellular and Wi-Fi radiation is not necessarily healthy. Mm-hmm. And so if she's on the phone for too long, it bugs me because, mm-hmm. and she understands because it is you're inviting radiation into your body, it harms your DNA, but I get anxious about that, because she's always on the phone,
and you're always the caretaker.
Yeah It's very I do so much. I cook for her and my son most often. And I want to make sure that they eat healthy, this is good.
Do you think you're going to struggle with control as a dad, as your son ages and starts to challenge you or starts to show you challenges?
I have no idea.
Oh, wow.
But I mean,
I do. I struggle with it with my kids I was a rebel kid. I was a bad kid. I was constantly testing limits and pushing my parents to the edge. And now I've got two just like them. And I'm like, what do I do? How do I got to parent you appropriately? How do I be a good parent to you? And if I would just get back to being a kid, you know?
Wait, say that question again. I want to make sure I answer it correctly.
All right. Do you predict as your child, as your son grows up and starts to challenge you behaviorally or individuate or try to
it has already started before. I remember when he was a younger baby, mm-hmm. and we're hanging out with other moms in Czech Republic, and the child was running all around, and we're meeting for the first time, and she was hard for her to get him to come over and hang out with where we were at because he doesn't want to run around everywhere, and if she tried to change his course or bring him over, he'd start crying, and then you're and she saw me and my son I was guiding him how to walk, mm-hmm. and he's holding my hands oh well, you're so lucky now, but when they get older and when they want to go their own, you can't tell them where to go, and I thought that was interesting because I didn't have that experience. But now I took him to the zoo, the Taipei Zoo, and Like, I could not, like, I want him to see other animals, but he just, I could not pick him up because he just wanted to walk wherever he wanted to walk.
Yeah.
So that was like, yeah, it was frustrating. But I'm just practicing on just letting him walk wherever he wants to walk.
Yeah.
Even though it goes away, strays away from the agenda. But my
where
wife
he should be.
Where
he should be.
My wife did get this, you know, that leash thing on the. Mm-hmm. So he has his independence, his quote unquote independence.
Yep. Yep.
And yet still we're able to like walk from one destination to another. Yeah.
I predict for you, Michael, that the more you're able to let your son walk wherever he wants, the less powerful your association with being everyone's caregiver will get. I think the more you're able to
I think it's with my wife though, because
really?
If I'm the parent to my child, okay, mm-hmm. That's a healthy role to play, but I should not be a parent to my wife. I should not be a parent as a child to my own parent. That whole role reversal is so toxic.
Mm-hmm.
So pain. That is the most common trauma I have seen with my clients. I believe is. People are going to hate me for saying this comment, but I feel like there should be a Me Too movement for this. I think it is the most, one of the most common traumas there is, because it runs deep. It's not like people think, was I my mom's or father's therapist? It's not exactly that. It's like when a parent doesn't deal with their pain and makes their child responsible for it, like if the child says something wrong or does something that the parent doesn't like, and the parent gets extremely anxious or angry, then you're making your child responsible for your pain.
Mm-hmm.
That role, and I've seen role reversals in very extreme ways. I cannot share exactly, but it will make your jaw drop to the floor.
Oh, I believe it.
It's sickening. I've seen sickening examples of it too. I cannot share with you.
No, I get it.
But it's so sickening.
Mm-hmm.
And still the parents' focus was something about happening in our society.
Mm-hmm.
Injustice in our society. But then there was like that injustice happening in your own family is sickening, but it's really like it helps me see what I had to go through and what this I think is a trauma that makes children feel absolutely utterly worthless.
Yes.
Like their only reason for existence is to serve the pain of others and nothing else.
Yes.
It's a horrible, traumatic, nightmarish, because I have one client now that I see this all the time. It's a young teenager, and it's just the stuff that these people believe about themselves is
it's pervasive, and it never goes away. And there's some of the hardest false beliefs, false self beliefs to fix, because they're so deeply ingrained. And I think because, you know, of attachment theory, because your brain is so, you're absorbing so much in those early, early years. You know, if you don't have a secure attachment with your parent who you see as an adult who's competent to protect you and keep you safe and be a parent and allow you to be a child, if you don't have that, there's just a constant anxiety that you can't even put your finger on until you figure out where that comes from. And I think you're absolutely right. For a lot of people, it's that those early relationships with our parents that were somehow we were asked to take on too much.
Yeah. Thank you for allowing me share.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Thank you for saying it, because I think it's absolutely 100% true. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
And thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
So what do you got to do now? You got to go take care of, you got your baby waking up here soon?
Now I just gotta regenerate, I'll meditate. But I, you know, I love the conversation we had today. It was great.
Yeah.
Great vibing with you.
Yeah, you too. You too. Yeah, glad you could. I'm glad you were able to do it. I'm glad you decided to do it.
Yeah. Thanks, my. Thank you. Thank my wife.
It's yeah. Always... I will. Thank you.
Yeah.
Right on.
All right. Well, thank you, cool. Stacey.
Yeah, absolutely. I will get this edited. I have.
Off oh, but this one weekend, last thing. So,
yeah.
I wanna. Still, I gotta do the shameless plug.
Oh yeah, yeah. Do yeah. Please do that.
So yeah. People want to connect with me, they can, you know, go to my website, heal, H-E-A-L, from the ground up.com. And they can, I just released a book called Whose Movie Are You In? Transform Your Intergenerational Trauma into Your Source of Light. And that has not only my personal story, but many other people's personal stories. As a lot of podcasters were willing to be vulnerable with me. And you can see other people's stories, so many. To really tap into your intergenerational ancestral vibration and trauma. A lot of things that we struggle with are cycles of struggle and pain. And so it didn't, not, so a lot of what you struggle with doesn't really belong to you and didn't really start with you. And it's really freeing to see like the whole picture, where it's really coming from, and to hear the story behind it, and to really have peace with it and separate from it and begin to change the cycle, so it heals the past generations, your current self, and the future generations. And the, you know, also the first book I released, it's a primer to that. It's like, it's called You Are the Fucking Shit. Mm-hmm. Heal Your Anxiety and Your Depression from the Ground Up. But yeah, those, I think I'm going to go be, I've taken a break from podcasting. I think I'm going to come back to it, and be more vulnerable. I think that's, mm-hmm. That's the my guiding post.
Yeah, absolutely. I come into every episode like I have no idea what I'm doing, and I think my house might be burning to the ground right now. I don't know, but this is my situation. So, and people seem to like that because I feel like people can be comfortable then when they know that you are not perfect.
For sure. For sure.
Right on. I'm so glad you came on.
Yes. Thank you.
And I will, so I'm off this weekend. I'm going to get it edited. I will have it up by this weekend at some point. It may be like Sunday night. I'm not sure. But throughout, I'll be off Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
After this interview, Michael reached out to tell me that having the space to be transparent brought about a lot of peace for him in the days afterward. I even ended up sleeping a lot better at night, he said. I feel a weight was lifted off me because I got to shed the skin of being the caretaker of others. There couldn't be a better validation of the ultimate thesis of this podcast. What we're ashamed of, what we're terrified people might find out about us, things we hope no one ever discovers because they would invalidate everything we believe is valuable about ourselves. Those are creative and personal roadblocks we set up for ourselves. The hardest thing to admit out loud to others and to ourselves are probably actually not that bad. Our own self-judgments, the bad things we think about ourselves when we consider them, probably 1,000 times harsher than what anyone else would think. I really enjoyed listening through this episode during the editing process. It was fun to listen to Michael grow more comfortable, and it basically proves my point if you go back and listen for the progression of the conversation. As his comfort with the interactions grows, so does mine, and I think that is probably what you can expect with anyone else with whom you choose to be vulnerable. Becoming more at ease with our own imperfections and hang-ups is one of the most efficient routes to just loosening the hell up, and I cannot advocate it more strenuously. Most importantly, though, I think the biggest takeaway from Michael's remarkable episode is that to be good parents, we need to handle our own shit. As parents, if we are unable to process and work through our own traumas, we will inflict at least some of our own issues on to our children who do not deserve to inherit them any more than we did. Learn more about Michael and his work and check out his podcast by visiting healfromthegroundup.com. I'm Stacey Gross, and this has been Two Moms Day Drinking. The music for this podcast was written and produced by my father, Bob Gross, on his goddamn electric ukulele.